You're listening to Beyond Bourbon Street, an insider's guide to New Orleans. Beyond Bourbon Street is the podcast where we explore the food, music, culture, places, and people that make New Orleans unique. Whether you are planning a trip, living in New Orleans, or simply wanting a taste of the Crescent City from wherever you are, you've come to the right place. And now, your host, Mark Bologna.
Hey, y'all, this is Mark. Welcome to episode 98. The last two shows were both Q&A episodes where I answered questions from listeners like you. We talked about a wide range of things, everything from where to eat, how to prepare for hurricanes, what I think about the city, why does it flood so often, all kinds of things. If you missed it, go back and give it a listen. The Q&A shows are always a fun time, at least for me, and they cover a wide range of topics. Today's episode is the third in a sub-series about staple crops or industries in Louisiana, things that are just iconic about the state and the city.
Staple crops.
Exactly. We're going to talk about that voice in just a minute. We've previously talked about Tabasco and Camellia red beans. Today, we're going to talk about coffee. And while coffee
is...
That's
why I'm here.
That's right. I didn't tell my guests. While coffee isn't grown in the city, we have a long history with it. But before we dive into that discussion, I want to tell you about two of our sponsors that make the show possible. First up is Two Chicks Walking Tours. My friend Christine Miller is the head chick in charge over at Two Chicks Walking Tours. If you love New Orleans, you probably wandered around the Garden District. It's beautiful, but it really comes to life when you have a guide who can tell you about the history and about the people who live there. On a Two Chicks Walking Tour, you learn about the architecture, the residents, and a whole lot more. You get to see where Anne Rice lived, where Saints favorite Archie Manning still lives, and you might even run into actor John Goodman walking his dog. You also get to tour Lafayette Cemetery, which is just across the street from Commander's. And that cemetery is one of my favorites because it's old, it's small, it has a lot of stories and a lot of character to it.
Oh, that it does.
Yes. Have you ever been on a Two Chicks Walking Tour?
I have not been on a Two Chicks Walking Tour. I should.
You should. We'll take care of that. Two Chicks keeps their tour groups small and offers a more intimate experience than a lot. You'll have time to ask questions, and you really walk away with an insider's perspective of the Garden District.
And they just do the Garden District, or they're all over?
That's a great question. Two Chicks also offers tours of St. Louis Cemetery No. 1, and they have a Ladies of the Night tour in the French Quarter.
Ladies of the Evening.
Huh? Ladies of the Evening, yes. Whatever you choose, know you're going to be in great hands, and you'll have a wonderful time. Use code BEYOND and save 15% over at twochickswalkingtours.com.
So my wife's birthday is coming up. Maybe
so there
I
you
should,
go. That would be perfect.
Yeah, I get her that.
I will connect you, who we haven't mentioned yet. I will connect you to Christine Miller, the head chick in charge over there.
Okay. That's...
So I'm giving it away. Our guest today, his first name is Kevin. He shall rename. We won't say anything more until I tell you about the other sponsor we have, Kevin.
Right.
So... One of the things I get a lot, we were talking about before we came online, is people get excited, they listen to the show, they join our Facebook community, and they say, I'm ready to move to New Orleans.
Yes, I hear that all the time.
Right? Okay.
It's crazy.
It's a New Orleanian, right,
it's
exactly.
Wild. People, you know, I mean, I'm from here, so when people are like, oh, I moved here, I'm like, why? It floods. What are you, you know, I'm not, I'm confused. But.
So, when people reach out to me, as you know, there's a lot of things you got to navigate, a lot of things you got to think about, and you know what you need? You need a realtor.
Realtor.
And that's where Liz Wood comes in.
Ah.
Let Liz and her team over at Liz Wood Realty help you find the right place, whether you're planning to rent or purchase the home of your dreams. Like you said, Kevin, New Orleans is a terrific city, but choosing the neighborhood that's the best for you, it can be tricky and a little bit overwhelming,
right? Block to block, right?
Right. Do you go uptown, downtown, by the lake, by the river? Do we go in the 9th Ward, mid-city? And like you said, block to block, it can be very different. You got
to
think about the traffic, the flooding, right? All those things.
Yes.
If you're thinking about moving, reach out to Liz at LizWoodRealty.com and make your dream of living in New Orleans a reality. A bunch of members of our community have already done that, and they're thrilled with their new homes. You will be too. LizWoodRealty.com. All right, Kevin, with all of that, let's jump into our discussion.
Awesome.
As I mentioned, or I didn't mention, my guest today is an artisan, a coffee roaster, and the host of a YouTube show.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about all of that.
Okay, cool.
Welcome to the podcast, Kevin Pedo.
Thank you
Did
so
I
much.
Did I say it right?
Pedo.
Pedo.
Pedo. You had it right the first time.
I'm going to get it.
Yes,
Pedo.
That was right.
So how are you, Kevin?
Doing well. I'm nice and caffeinated, so I'm all good. You too. I'll tell you what, you know, I don't know when this is going to come out, but we're recording this in August. And it is. September. I'm sorry. It's now September.
It's like August.
Early September.
So we're recording this right the first week of September. It's going to come out next week.
Oh, okay. Cool.
Around the 10th or 12th.
So it's still going to be hot then.
Still going to be hot.
Because it's brutal. I mean, it's just brutal here today. Brutal.
It is hot.
We are
coming to you from the public auction house.
Yeah, auction house market.
Over here on Magazine and Julia.
Yeah, we're in the event space. And I don't know, I mean, if you've seen this place or you can Google it or whatever, it's Instagram, it's like super Instagram famous. It's a really cool space. And so it's an event. We're actually, you know, quietly in the event space next door, next to the auction house market. But even in the market, we've got a bunch of sofas. You can come grab coffee from the coffee stall. And just kind of chill out if you're downtown. So it's a great location to chill.
It's a good spot if you come to visit. It's not far from the old number 77 hotel, which we'll talk about later.
That's right down the block.
That's
huh?
right.
Yeah.
But it's a good lunch spot. Really good lunch spot.
Oh, yeah. They got 9 different restaurants in here, I believe.
I really like Empanola.
Empanola, yeah. Empanola's great.
Good spot for lunch. It's close to the World War II Museum.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We get a lot of people.
And so
from
you
there.
Mentioned you guys have one of the stalls here. You have Coast Roast Coffee.
Yes, Coast Roast. Yeah, we're the coffee shop here. And we also, in themed with markets, we are also, you may know us from St. Rock, at St. Rock Market on St. Claude. And we have the coffee shop here at auction, and we have the coffee shop over at St. Rock as well.
And you are coming up on, hopefully in the next little bit, that you're going to open your first standalone shop. Is that
yes,
right?
Yes. So it's absolutely great. Yes. Yeah, so we roast coffee over in Long Beach, Mississippi, is where our physical roaster is. And so when I met my partner Sean, he had a little coffee shop over there called Bankhouse Coffee in Long Beach, which is still there. He's ended up opening a Coast Roast over there. I've got the two over here. And yes, so we're real pumped that we're going to be able to open up. We're going to be at 3618 Magazine. And I really haven't made any big public announcement about it up until, I guess this will be it. So
there you go. Breaking news.
Breaking news, yes.
And I should mention, we'll put links to everything we talk about over in the show notes.
Cool.
Which will be over at beyondbourbonst.com/98. So we'll put links to Coast Roast, your website, and as well as all the locations.
Yeah, we're pumped. Mid October.
So by the time people hear this, right, with the city, hopefully a month, 6 weeks from now.
Yeah, that's a lot up. Yeah. So we're moving right along. I think everything's been going smoothly so far. So I don't know if that means we're going to get delayed soon or if it's going to open on time. But mid October is what we're shooting for. So just as soon as it gets fall, it's going to be great. If you're not great with like addresses on Magazine, it's one block up from Harry's Ace Hardware.
Yep.
Kind of catty corner from Lillette almost. Mm-hmm. And it's just one block uptown on the opposite side of the street from Harry. So between Louisiana and Magazine, which is really cool because there's not, it seems like a coffee dead zone on Magazine mm-hmm. Street there. So, which is wild because people are like, another coffee shop on Magazine Street. What? Right. But it's really not, there's nothing around there. So we're pretty excited. We did a pop-up at Imperial Woodpecker Snowball Stand several years ago. We did a little coffee shop there, and it was awesome. So it's really cool to be coming to the neighborhood. So it's awesome.
Very nice. My kids and I were at Imperial Woodpecker just the other day.
Ah, yeah. Right there. I mean, we're right there. All in that same two blocks.
So one of the reasons I wanted to have you on the show was to talk about the way that you approach coffee and your passion for coffee and the idea of small roasting.
Yeah.
But before we do that, what I also want to do, we'll talk about that. And I kind of want to talk about the history a little bit of coffee in New Orleans, if you're good with that, and how that has come full circle in terms of you are one of a small cadre of companies that are small roasting here.
Yeah.
And yet, like, your new shop is going to be literally a couple blocks from the river where there's a whole coffee infrastructure that people don't even realize.
No, people don't realize that. People don't realize what, and even beyond coffee in New Orleans itself, it's coffee in general. People mm-hmm. just kind of like, it is the world's second largest commodity behind oil. And so people just see it everywhere. And people don't realize the amount of thought that each individual coffee blend goes into. And yeah, we'll go into that too. But as New Orleans specifically, New Orleans is the second largest coffee importing port in America. And it's been number two behind New York, and New York passed up New Orleans, I think, sometime in the early 2000s.
And in these days, most of the port is hidden because of the levee. So most people don't realize there's a whole infrastructure there on the port.
Huge.
And so people don't see those cargo containers or the ships, but
it's gigantic. Folgers has the largest coffee roasting plant on planet Earth in New Orleans. And so they have a whole infrastructure in place with other companies that support them behind that wall you're talking about.
Right.
That's just an insane amount of coffee.
So if you could jump back 150, 200 years, when you could have easily seen all the ships docking right up, you would have seen, among other things, you would have seen lots of coffee coming off.
Tons and tons and tons and tons. And now everything's containerized, too. So, you know, the containers. Right. Back in the day, you'd have had to sling those sacks off. And they'll still break those. I mean, so those will get moved to, like, New Orleans East in one particular location, and they'll be unloaded from those containers much in the same way they've always kind of have been. So it's pretty wild.
So what's that process? They come in on ships from all over the world.
Yes.
And then there are obviously coffee traders.
Yeah, so some of the coffee traders that have been that are in the city right now, they've been doing this super generationally. That some of them have changed hands and changed names, but most of them can trace their lineage back to the early 1800s.
We're actually going to talk to one in about 6 or 8 weeks. We're going to talk to someone whose family has been trading coffee for about 150 years in the city.
Oh, awesome, awesome, awesome. Yeah, totally. So there's many of those traders, and they're pulling samples from all over the world. They're checking a lot of the coffee samples. A lot of those samples are coming in. I'll take a look at those samples and decide kind of what I'm looking for. But I'm always kind of thinking about my end coffee drinker and my coffee customer. Because I'm trying to say when you have a cup of coffee, you know, and I guess this is like any business, but when you have a cup of coffee, your expectation of its quality is somewhere, but you know, like if you go to a gas station or you go to a fancy restaurant or you come to my coffee shop, you're going to have a different expectation of what that coffee is going to be.
Sure.
So when I'm looking to create those types of blends, I have to decide from the get-go, who is my end user?
Okay.
What coffee are we going to do? And what are we pairing it with? Because, you know, if you're having a cup of coffee with your bread pudding, or you're having a cup of coffee with a bacon omelet, it's going to be very, those flavor profiles of that drink is going to be very different. And if I've done my job properly, when you drink one of those drinks, you say, oh, this is a nice cup of coffee. And you don't ever think about it beyond that. So
that's interesting. So as you described that, that's very similar to trying to pair a wine with a dish.
It's extremely simple. It's extremely similar. So my wife and I, when we went on our honeymoon, we went to Napa, and they had a wine blending class, because most all coffees you're drinking are blends of single origins, and so wine's the same way. And wine, unfortunately, when I would say Colombian coffee, I have to say Colombian blend, but if you see Cabernet Sauvignon or whatever, it's just Cab. That's it.
Right.
But they have blends in there. It only has to be 85%. So when I learned that, I was crazy. So we went and did a tasting, and it was a class. It was a wine blending class.
Okay.
And the guy was like, all right, you know, here's how you blend the wines. And I'm like, no, this is great. This is what I do for a living. This is, I totally get it. And so afterwards, you know, he's talking about the type of wine he likes and why he did that. And then afterwards, he's talking about the coffee he drinks in the morning. I'm like, all right, cool. Listen, understand. I'm looking at your wine blend. I totally get it. What you need to do is you need to go get some Sumatra and blend it into your coffee at 10%. And let me know. And so sure enough, he emailed me back. He's like, this is the best cup. I can't believe. But I was looking at what he was doing with the wine blend, and it's very similar. You have body, you have acidity, you have sweetness, you have fruit flavors, all of those types of different. And there's coffee is actually like 10,000 times more complex than wine. Like literally, that's the actual number. There's that many more flavoring compounds in coffee. So it's much more complex than wine. And so to get that, there's lots of different types of coffee flavors.
And so does that start with where the actual agriculture and the soil and the climate where those beans are grown?
Absolutely. So yes, it's the soil, it's how high it is. So much like, and if you're, if my audience is familiar with wine a little bit. It's much in the same way. So if the plant has to struggle mm-hmm. at higher altitudes, then it creates more flavor.
Okay.
You know, so if it's grown higher in the mountains, caffeine is a pesticide that the plant puts out. So if it's grown higher in the mountains, there's less bugs up there. There's less caffeine in nicer, higher end coffees. So the higher it's grown, the slower it develops, the more flavor it develops, and the less caffeine it has.
Hmm.
So there's a lot of little tidbits and stuff like that.
So you're thinking about all that from the perspective of where the raw beans are coming from,
right,
as you try to think about that end customer.
I'm looking at the end customer. If I'm mm-hmm. trying to do a blend for a high-end coffee shop, I have to think about that from the get-go. What is that end cup going to look like? What's it going to taste like? What's it going to feel like? Mm-hmm. All those things, and how to get there. So, and of course, it's very subjective. Some people love Ethiopian coffee. I'm sure a lot of people, when I said that, are like, "Oh yeah, I love Ethiopian." And it's a great coffee, but it's also very fruit forward. So mm-hmm. if that's not something that's not something I want to serve, like, without letting my customer know that it's going to be fruit forward. Because if you sure. buy it, you get it, you put your milk in it, and you're like, "Oh, I think there might be something wrong with your milk." And it's like, no, it's super high-end product. It's supposed to taste like that. Like, that's what, you know, so just because something costs more and is unique in some way doesn't necessarily make it better.
Sure, sure.
You know?
So tell me about the process. So you're thinking about the consumer
mm-hmm.
enjoying that cup of coffee. And so you purchase the beans. One of the things that intrigues me about your company is that you guys intentionally don't mass produce, right? So you take that to, I mean, you produce
yes.
a lot, but
we produce a lot, but we're not a mass.
Very old fashioned.
We have, so yeah, that's our, that's, yeah. So that's the big thing with Coast Roast. Anything that's coming, Coast Roast, is coming off of one of our antique coffee roasters. And those coffee roasters have been roasting coffee in this city for 100 years. And so we've rebuilt them. We've got two now.
Okay.
So it's definitely those particular old roasters. And I do create coffee blends for some other companies, and then we have a modern roaster that we
sure.
kind of use for
so
some different
white label.
So we can do, yeah. I mean, we also do that in. But Coast Roast is definitely coming off of our antique machine.
And so why do you do it that way? Why do you choose to, with Coast Roast?
The antique machines are just better. I mean,
really?
They just are. If I did the same coffee with the exact same roast on the modern machine and the old machine, coming out the same bag and the same crop, you'd prefer the old roaster. The reason that is the old roaster has a good mix of a hot drum
mm-hmm.
and it's a perforated drum, so that heat's moving through the drum nice and evenly.
Okay.
And the flame is coming through that, so they're not exactly efficient, but that heat and that smoke moving out creates a nice clean cup when you've got that airflow proper. And it develops the sugar in it a little bit differently than a modern roaster. So a lot of the modern roasters are solid drums.
Mm-hmm.
And those drums, if you can imagine, when I say a drum, it's kind of like a dryer.
Mm-hmm.
The dryer is spinning, and as those beans are hitting the outside of the dryer in different spots, you get hot spots and you don't have kind of the airflow. So, but then there's also roasters that are just airflow, like a hot popcorn popper. So the old Royals that we use are a nice in between of those. And I think people got away from that because the solid drums allow me to, as a roaster, allow me to buy junk coffee, broken pieces of bean in a solid drum, and roast those broken pieces of bean. And guess what? You probably buy a lot of ground coffee. So if it's going to be ground anyway, you're never, the end user is never going to see that coffee.
Mm-hmm.
And so that would be a way a coffee roaster would be able to cheat and get some broken beans. But with those antique roasters, it's impossible for me to roast those. The broken pieces will fall through those perforated drums.
Sure.
So it has to be that. So, and of course, if you're buying whole bean, you know what you're getting.
You know, as you describe that, longtime listeners know that my family owned a po' boy shop called Teddy's Grill on
uh-huh.
Franklin Avenue in Gentilly. And the po' boy bread bakers all had these very old machines and equipment.
Yeah.
And now the only one that I know of that still has the old equipment is Leidenheimer's.
Uh-huh.
In fact, I'm going to talk to Binder.
Huh?
Yeah, I'm going to talk to Sandy Wan in a couple weeks on the show, again, in this kind of sub-series about staples. There are others that came back after the storm that make great bread, but they lost their machines. And so they had to get new machines. And that made a difference. I remember Angelo Genduce's, uh-huh, not far from, uh-huh, St. Rock, uh-huh, who's right behind the now gone Jeans.
Yeah.
They had these old, and they were so particular about them, because,
oh, yeah,
they said the new ovens would be cheaper to run and more efficient and
but
faster, but they didn't have the characteristics.
Absolutely.
Sounds just like what you're talking
about. It's exactly that. And I was skeptical about this at first. When we got the modern roaster, I'm like, oh, great, we're moving into the future. We've got this great modern roaster. This is going to be great. But it really didn't produce the same quality that those antique roasters did. And so I did bring some samples around to some of the importers, mm-hmm, from the two roasters when we did that, you know, and I was sampling them, and we were cupping. The process of tasting coffee is cupping. We could talk a little bit about that, but
yeah.
They, you know, so like one of the old guys in the tasting room was like, well, let me ask you this. I mean, without you being offended, like, why did you buy that new piece of crap? So like it's certainly within the old New Orleans coffee community, certainly those old antique machines certainly have I don't know about the new third wave folks, but certainly amongst the old guys. One of my favorite compliments I've ever gotten about our coffee, someone was like, man, your coffee tastes like I think coffee, like in my brain, coffee should taste like, it's just better. And it's like, so instead of trying to reinvent the wheel and trying to do different modern types of roasts, we're doing a very old school roast, but we're getting you that old school roast fresh, which is huge. And there's getting it when you're drinking our coffee, it's been roasted this week. So all of that stuff is very important to the final flavor, but we're doing it on our old antique machines.
Well, and that's a nice tie-in to our sponsor, which I want to tell you a little bit about now, the Old Number 77 Hotel. It's a place I've recommended frequently. It's in a great location in the Warehouse District, just 3 blocks from the French Quarter. It's close to lots of great places to eat and drink, and it's near the streetcar lines, too. I love that they have a wide range of choices when it comes to rooms. Really something for everybody. They have these interior rooms for when you don't want any hint of daylight after a long night out. They also offer premium rooms and artist loft suites that are curated by local New Orleans artists. And another thing I really love is that they support local artists and artisans by exhibiting their works and selling their products, including Sweet Olive Soapworks, Nola Boards, and Chop Industries, 3 businesses all owned by women and featured on this podcast in the past. Oh, and the hotel's pet-friendly, too. As if all that wasn't enough, they have an award-winning restaurant, Compare Le Pen. And besides great food, they have terrific cocktails. The Old Number 77 Hotel is located at 535 Chapatoula Street. Use code BBOLD77 when you book a room and save 25%. Plus, you get a little bit of lagniappe, a little something extra, in the form of a $10 credit at Tootlaw for coffee and stuff in the morning. All right, let's get back to our discussion. And so we're back. And again, you know, the Old 77, I don't know if you know this, it, uh-huh, is in a building that was a coffee warehouse.
Yes. Yeah, I do. My brother, actually, he had, they were getting, when he got married, they got dressed and stuff there at the Old 77.
And that whole, like, you know, now we think of the Warehouse District, or they call it the Arts District sometimes, is a very sort of burgeoning area. But,
uh-huh,
until right before the World's Fair in 1984, that was still warehouses.
Yeah,
that
totally
was like Coffee Alley right in there.
Yeah, absolutely. And the Board of Trade building was right near, I think it's an event hall like everything, uh-huh, else downtown now. But it was, I mean, back the coffee traders downtown would, I mean, they had to go to the Board of Trade. Now everything's online. You know, you can trade coffee from your phone. But back in the day, they had to like leave their office and go down to the Board of Trade and make whatever trades they needed to do. So everything was, and some of the coffee traders are still there to,
yeah,
this day, but around Gravier and Magazine, there was a lot of, so right down from that Old 77. So yeah, they were totally there. And people ask me all the time, they're like, oh, do you ever go to Origin and look at the coffees? And I always say, yeah, sometimes I go out to New Orleans East and check it out, because a lot of the warehouses are there, or on,
okay,
the West Bank and Elmwood. So there's a lot of we were talking about earlier, it's still the second largest coffee importing city in America. So there's certainly a lot of coffees around. But they're all out there.
And you mentioned that earlier. So I guess for my own education and for the listeners, the physical coffee comes off the ships. It's in containers these days.
Yes. Uh-huh.
It's sold and it goes into warehouses scattered.
It might go into warehouses and then sold for a bunch of times. It might sit around for a while, because it's a commodity trade.
But so there's a lot of warehouses in the surrounding area.
There's a lot of warehouses around the surrounding area. Old buildings, old furniture warehouses. Dupree over by when you're coming across the high rise is one of the big ones. Right there by the Louisiana building, and there is a Folgers plant. That's not their big one, but there's a Folgers plant there as well. So there's a huge little hub right there. Yeah, on the West Bank in Elmwood, there's a lot of big warehouses that you drive by every day that are full of coffee. I believe the old Gentilly store, the old Schwegman's Gentilly store, is full of coffee these days too. So here's this old mecca of retailing that's storing coffee these days.
That's sort of one of the hidden things about New Orleans is I drive around and you see buildings, there are float dens, there are coffee warehouses, right? Uh-huh. That people don't realize that you go by every day.
Yeah.
Where do you guys actually roast? You roast here in the city?
We roast over in Long Beach, Mississippi. So right outside the city. Long Beach is between Pass Christiana and Gulfport, if you're familiar with the Biloxi kind of area. So we're there in Long Beach. We're right behind an old bank building where I met my partner Sean, and he roasts there. And so now we've kind of expanded into a pole building behind there. And so, all of our roasting is done there.
And so, how did you first come into this love of coffee to the point of moving from a consumer of coffee to a purveyor and a?
So before, I guess this is the fun. Here's a fun New Orleans story for you. During high school and college, I sold king cakes for Randazzo's Bakery. And so one of our accounts at the time was PJ's. Mm-hmm. And so I was traveling, from PJ's to PJ's, meeting with people and just getting hopped up on all these different types of coffee. And that was one of the first times I've ever really seen green bean Felton over at PJ's. And this is, I'm talking 15, 20 years ago now. He was one of the first people to show me raw coffee, which we call green bean in the business. And also traveling from the PJ's, it was interesting because, I'd meet one person and they've got Guatemalan, and the next one would be Kenya, and they would all taste different. And that really kind of got me into that. So, and then from that point, what happened was after Katrina hit, I guess everybody's New Orleans story starts there. I started to purchase my grandmother was living in Long Beach in a summer house my great grandfather built out there because she lost her house here, So I was traveling back and forth and I met Sean over there, and the guy he was buying coffee from lost his roaster in the Katrina, so he had bought this antique roaster to play with. And so I met him there and started doing that. And so I was like, I'm still close with the Randazzos. So I was like, hey, let me sell some of this coffee off. They don't have a good coffee these days. So let me go bring them some of your coffee if you can roast this, for me. And he did. And it was, I started selling coffee like that for gas money and ended up I was working at Channel 8 News at the time, so ended up quitting media and getting into coffee. So that was over 10 years ago now, actually.
So that's, as you said,
that's it in a nutshell.
No, that's great. But as you said that, I just thought of my friend Scott Walker, who also left media
and went
into food. They have Shipley's Donuts.
Exactly. Yeah, right? Well, media is a whole different thing. Look at us. We're on a podcast.
That's
you know
right.
what I mean? You may get, I don't want to, I don't know what the viewer numbers are, but you might get more listeners here on this podcast than Channel 4 News these days, and people are like, what?
Definitely it's a new media, and we're doing this out of, all the equipment fits in a backpack. Yeah, it's a different, and even for the traditional media, it's a different world than it was.
And I'm sure, I'm totally not listening to radio anymore. I've been listening to podcasts. I'm driving around. I got the podcasts you can do. So media is totally changing in how people consume media. You're probably driving around right now. You know.
That's right, as they're listening to us, right?
Right. So, you know, media's totally changed, and so I think it shuffles people in and out of it. But, of course, I still do media.
Right.
You know, I still got my little YouTube show.
I want to talk about that real quick before we move on, though. So when did Coast Roast, when was it born?
So it was over 10 years ago. So back when I really started doing this, there was only really one other kind of competitor in the market that was doing anything like third wave-ish roasting wise. So as we've gone throughout the years, we've had lots of small little boutique roasters open up around town, and it's really been great. I mean, we've that awareness of what fresh roasted coffee is and what better coffee is has really, I think there's a Japanese saying or a Chinese saying or something, and it's a rising tide raises all boats. So a lot of people are surprised by this fact, but in the 1950s, coffee consumption was much higher than it was today per capita. And it's because throughout the years, the big players, the Folgers, the Maxwell Houses of the group, the Folgers and the Maxwell Houses were putting out, you know, not great of quality coffee. So people drank less because the quality went down. Mm-hmm. So now net quality is going back up. People are drinking more coffee. So coffee consumption per capita is increasing.
That's interesting. And I think having grown up in New Orleans,
We've always had access to great coffee. And so I get that question a lot, like, why does the third wave thing never really took off here or did or whatever? But it's because of course, as companies change and get bought out by people, you know, we definitely have different, as the companies change, the qualities, you know, change. But for the most part, a lot of the small family-owned businesses here, we're always putting out something of a better cup of coffee than you would be getting from the Folgers and the Maxwell Houses of the world. So certainly we've always had better coffee.
Sure. And I think about community coffee.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
So much better than standard coffee in other places. Mm-hmm. Right? Really good coffee.
But yeah, Raleigh Foods.
Yeah.
You know, they put out a lot of great, you know, French Market is a great product.
Mm-hmm.
It's for a grocery store. I mean, there's different, you know, because some people will give me a cup of coffee. What do you think about this coffee? And it was kind of like what I'm saying before.
Time and place.
Different times and places, different products, you know, for different things. So, you know, I'm not, Coast Roast is just not a grocery store coffee.
Right,
you're not going to get that in a grocery store.
Sure.
But
as you mentioned, so, you know, as I think, I don't know, I think PJ's is probably 25 years old now,
yeah.
20, right? And then CC's, community sort
yeah.
of competitor brand to that.
Right.
But then there really weren't a lot of the small kind of places like Coast Roast until, like you say, 10 years and even newer. But
yeah.
now there's a pretty good community of I think, right?
Yeah,
it's small,
sure,
but people making very sort of
boutique artisan-y types of coffees. Yeah, and I think that's a great thing. I love, you know, and again, like I'm saying, there's so many of those that people try different ones and are aware that, you know, a fresh roasted product is great.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a thermally, I don't want to, some of the coffee guys, if I start talking about coffee and comparing it to baking, they're going to get angry, but they're just going to have to deal with it because baking is sort of similar. It's a thermally processed product.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like, you know, do you want a Chips Ahoy or do you want a fresh baked cookie? Well, the fresh baked cookie is probably going to beat it all the time, you know? And then from there, well, do I like this type of cookie or that type of cookie? And so there's different, you know, just because different coffees have different flavors, have different purposes, and different roasters have different signatures, you know? So like I said, certainly Coast Roast would be the very old school, a very old school way of doing it that's kind of not being done anymore, but we're really doing it that old school way. So it's much, you know, like that flavor should be something that you get, you know?
Yeah. I mean, as you described that and you mentioned sort of that there are often small businesses, having grown up in a small business, when the first sort of competitor comes on, you think, oh my gosh, the world's going to fall.
Oh,
and
yeah.
then you quickly realize in a little niche like that, it's better to have several because now you're attractive. Someone might come and want to try three or four or five. Right?
So every Friday, so we're recording this on a Friday.
Right.
And so every Friday we do, Rand. So of course, like I said, I'm still good friends with the Randazzos. Worked there in high school and college. It's crazy.
That's
but I do their we do their fried pies on Fridays. Okay. You know? And so with Hubig's coming back, yes. You know, some you know, I keep people keep hitting me. Oh, what are you gonna do in Hubig's? I'm like, you're gonna come get the pies. Like, and people come, are gonna go, oh, we tried Hubig's again. It's great. Now we're gonna grab these Randazzo's ones, or they're gonna buy them to compare them, and just that once people start talking about that, I think we're gonna. So I think on Fridays, I think we're gonna sell a lot more fried pies.
Absolutely.
once that kind of comes back, and I think that whole talk, you know, helps. So yes, I think people get very worried, like, oh, we're. But in reality, the awareness of fresh roasted coffee, or the awareness of good fried pies, the availability of fried pies, or whatever that is. No, you're right. When a new competitor comes in, I think people freak out. But I think it ends up certainly helping the consumer in the long run,
sure.
Of course.
Yeah.
And I think that keeps everybody. Not the different businesses to get in a line, but I know, you know, it helps me not to try to be everything to everybody and try to keep Coast Roast as to what it is and to keep, so that people know what they're getting, you know.
Well, and we get listeners that will write to us or join our Facebook crew, which is the Beyond Bourbon Street crew, KREWE, by the way. Mm-hmm. But we get people that say, I love coffee. Tell me, like, create a little coffee tour for me. Or I love beer, or I love this. And anytime there's kind of more than one choice, it's great because some people are really into that, and that's what they'll do, right? It's good for the industry. It's good for the community of roasters or the community of bread bakers or whatever it might be.
Yeah, absolutely. Because if you don't have, I mean, we can have the greatest coffee community in the country, and we do, but it, like you said before, it's behind those walls,
right?
And so if they're behind the walls of the port, people don't get to really experience the great coffee that we do have here. So, and then of course also, you know, like I said, I did mention, you know, Folgers is here, but as you know, I can tell you just in my size, and we, like I said, we supply coffee to different coffee shops around town as well and stuff. So, but even at my size, I've been able to bring in more coffee into this city than would have been here before.
Oh, interesting.
So higher end stuff that would have maybe gone somewhere else is now coming here because I'm here using it. Oh. So in addition to, I don't want to make it sound like, you know, the coffee's there and I'm kind of like pulling off of it, because I think having better coffee roasters also improves the quality of coffee that's in the city behind those walls as well.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Well, and I just think it's so amazing. Again, for our listeners, whether you're local here in New Orleans or you're coming to visit, next time you go into Chapatoulas, next time you go to Hanson's to have a snowball and say hi to Ashley over there, you are just like a baseball's throw away from the
near one of the largest stockpiles of coffee on planet Earth.
Right.
It's crazy.
It's right there. My kids learned to swim at Love Swimming right back there.
Oh, uh-huh.
One day I went to pick them up and they were little and they both said, why does it smell like coffee? And I said, well, right there.
It is a huge.
And it was interesting that they picked up on that, but you can't see it.
And there's so much there as far as like the coffee, like cleaning the coffee, blending those blends. Because once those blends are made, they have to be blended.
Uh-huh.
So all the different grades, they've got spectrometer things that can pull all the different like bad coffee out of them stuff, and all that stuff's located there.
One of these days I'm going to go do I should do an episode about the port.
Yeah, you should do a port. The port, actually, we did a little promo video. I did a little promo. Well, they invited me, I should say, to do a little promo video with them to try to like make it more relatable.
All right.
So, like,
yeah.
And it was really cool to see the port.
That's neat.
Yeah.
It was
neat.
And that kind of gives us a little segue into, we mentioned it in passing about media and your past.
Oh, yes.
But you do a YouTube show called Coffee with Kevin.
Coffee with Kevin. So it's a little, you know, it got the original, the reason I started that wasn't really to be a news program. I started it to try to, you know, one of the things, you know, and again, like we've talked about, I'm a roaster. I supply coffee to coffee shops, and I'm certainly passionate about that. But one of the things in doing St. Rock and really being involved at a coffee shop is that the coffee is great. And to me now, after a decade of doing this, it's second nature to me to put out a cup of coffee, you know? So it didn't, the challenge kind of becomes to how do we create a community around the coffee shop? So the coffee shop was, if you want to talk about media and consumption, really the coffee shop started it in the 1600s, you know, that, and at that time, the craziest part is the coffee was brewed and then it went somewhere else to be taxed and then brought back into the coffee shop and reheated. So, I mean, they must've been drinking some terrible stuff and, but still yet people still came to the coffee shops to come up with ideas. It's the morning upper as opposed to the downer in the bar, you know, and it's where those ideas are made. So the idea behind the show was originally to like, let me sit down with people who come. If you watch the earlier episodes of the show, it's just normal everyday people that started coming through the St. Rock Market. Hey,
it was my customer base.
Yeah. And the idea was like, if I sat down and interviewed my customers, that then the next person might watch that and then see that guy and be like, oh, he's a photographer. I saw your show, blah, blah, blah. Oh, you rent to people. You have a, you know, whatever their thing was. So it was originally designed to kind of build a community, but then like once the mayoral race and stuff happened and I started getting like incredible guests like Clancy Dupos. And so then the show kind of morphed into this like talk show news show. And so it's really, it has expanded from just the St. Rock community to more of like a city as a whole community. My wife's favorite episode of the show, I had a girl from, I don't know. She's from Florida and she's from here now. Like you say, people move here all the time, and she does cemetery tomb restorations, and she talked a lot about that and the cemeteries, and so that was one of her favorite episodes. So it the show got political, it got, you know, and it kind of like snowballed into something. So I do wish I had more time to spend on it, because it certainly is a fun pet project, but it really kind of bring the viewer into St. Rock, and it's the people, it's the ideas, that is the natural conversation that I would have with whoever would stop in for coffee, you know.
It's great, and we'll put links to it again at the on our website at Beyond Bourbon.
It's campy,
yes, a little bit, but it's good. So I'll put it in our, I'll put a link, beyondbourbonst.com/98. But they're fun, and they are fun to see how it's changed. But I kind of like I like some of the ones you've done with, I'll say, celebrities, if you will. But I like the everyday people.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
that idea of coffee and to a degree the market as well.
Oh, the market plays a role.
Bringing people together.
Yeah,
right?
there's me. So you got like this yacht host, and then you have a guest, and then the market itself certainly plays a part.
Yeah, it's its own personality.
And then the coffee shop has its own personality as well, because I'll have my baristas back there. Harry is, my manager, and he kind of plays into it. And Harry's kind of the Chopsley to my Morgus, you know? Uh-huh. So he's kind of in the background doing whatever he's doing, and then I'll pull him in if we're going to dance with the 610 Stompers or something like that, you know, then he kind of gets pulled in, or the barista that's back there. We were talking about like the podcasts and like this, you know, and this is certainly a more intimate thing, whereas that's more of a daytime talk show meets, yeah, so it's
a little bit, but I do think it kind of you get to see glimpses of New Orleans,
yeah,
and that's really fascinating, because I think that's one of the things I love about podcasting. But in general, what you find is almost everyone you come across has a story,
yeah,
wherever that is. New Orleans maybe has more characters than most. I don't know, but
yeah, I don't know if that's true or not, but right, it certainly does. There certainly are a lot of fun
characters.
I feel like
you could take anyone off a street almost anywhere in the world and have a cup of coffee or a drink and just talk, and they have interesting stories.
And you know what's interesting too, when you start talking about New Orleans and you talk about your listeners, one of the things that I find when I travel somewhere to like, so when I travel somewhere to like San Francisco, that's definitely not New Orleans. Mm-hmm. And if I can stop that person just for a second and they ask me where I'm from and I say New Orleans, it's very interesting that New Orleans comes out in that person, even if they've never been there before. I met this one person and I was telling, I was buying shoes in San Francisco. Was like, oh, you're from New Orleans. And she started telling me this story about her friend that went to this bar and how far they walked from this bar to that bar. And she had never been in the city, but she listened to that story and was able to convey it back to me, which is wild. So I think that I think New Orleans lives in a lot of people in a way that's not exactly tangible. So when you say there's certain characters in New Orleans, yes, I am lucky to live in a city that people want to visit and that people want to live in. And I get to, you know, have a coffee shop in that city. I wake up every morning and I am just pumped. Like, it's so cool to be able to do that. And if that makes me a character, well, then I'm a character.
I've always thought growing up in New Orleans is wonderful. But growing up in the food business or the music business is a whole level of insiderness of New Orleans.
Oh,
you
yeah.
just get to know people, right?
Yeah, oh, you just...
You get regular customers, and just sort of become part of the fabric of their lives.
Yeah, totally, totally. And especially St. Rock is the hub of that side of town, you know? So
for people that don't know, St. Rock Market is downtown from the French Quarter, so downriver a little bit.
Yeah.
It's very close to the train tracks, which are pretty historic.
Yes. Yeah. There'll be a train blocking you, so you won't get much further than that. But St. Rock is going to be on this side of the railroad
and it
tracks.
Was a market.
It was an old public market. And so it actually is one of the only two public markets that are still owned by the city of New Orleans. So the city of New Orleans owns the French Market and St. Rock. But there was a whole network prior to grocery stores, there was a whole network of public markets that would have been. So there would have been... St. Rock was more seafood. Mm-hmm. There was a meat market on Piney that my great-grandfather was a night watchman at. And so, like, that would have been more of the meat market. So you'd have had to go around and make groceries at all of these different places.
Well, even in the 70s and into the 80s, we went to the French Market a couple mornings a week to get fresh produce.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because there was no... Restaurant Depot or Sam's, right? You went and got fresh produce that was coming off ships
For your restaurant.
For the restaurant.
So cool.
Dixie tomatoes, and there was a vendor for cabbage and onions, and very specific, just a couple things each. But you would go to the stalls, and you would load up and get what you needed for a couple days at the restaurant, and that you would see. Plenty of other restaurant tourists there. That's
St. Rock is not that.
Right. But it was at one
time.
Wasn't,
certainly
it was that way.
Yeah. Now it's a modern food hall is what it is, essentially. But, and of course, we have the coffee shop in that food hall. And so we've get a lot of the city government, you know, Kristen Palmer, our council person, she comes in and meets people for coffee all the time. Mm-hmm. And so we have events with her. So, and then people know if they come in and they want to, you know what I mean? They can kind of grab her sometimes because she pops in. So you kind of get to know the regulars and the regulars get to know each other, which is what I was really trying to kind of get going with the YouTube show to where it's like, oh, I'm going to go pop in there because I'll be able to catch, you know, so-and-so.
It's a fun show. Again, the reason I bring it up is I want people to go see it. I want people to go link to it after you hear this and go check it out. You really get kind of a cross-section of people come on the show. And so I hope that...
Oh, it's certainly a cross-section.
But that's great.
Yeah, that is the idea, though. You know, that's the kind of the fun part.
It is fun. So I hope that once you get settled with the new shop on Magazine, that you guys are able to squeeze out some time to get them out a little bit more.
That's the idea. Yeah, I'm super pumped about the Magazine store. I can't wait to obviously do some episodes of the show over at the Magazine store.
And I have been a bad host. I should have mentioned right up front that you can find Coast Roast at coastroastcoffee.com.
Yep.
And on all the socials, I think you're the same thing, right?
Yeah,
on Instagram and
Coast Roast
Coffee, Twitter and Facebook.
You'll find it. Yeah.
Yeah, and we'll put links to that. I think showing your personality is a good thing. And again, because particularly with small companies, right?
Yeah.
It's so much about the person and the personalities and the culture of the place.
Yeah, there's a lot of places you can go get a cup of coffee from, you know, in this city from a corporate entity that you don't know.
And that's probably a good place to start to wrap it up. But that's exactly the point of having, I wanted to talk about, like you did, both the big picture, all this coffee comes into this port. A lot of it is sort of nameless and faceless. Uh-huh. A lot of it isn't. And one of the things that you guys are doing over at Coast Roast, along with a small group of others in the city, is really curating and making an artisan type coffee that sometimes you do want to grab and go coffee, but when you want to really enjoy and maybe learn about different tastes and flavors.
That's definitely where I come in. So, you know, when you talk about that, that's going to be huge. And it's definitely going to be, I mean, certainly here at the markets, we're focused on that, but definitely over at the new store, I really want to try to focus on, yeah, coming in and getting your coffee to brew at the house. So you can come in, you can talk with me, you can kind of find out what you like, what you don't like. Try, I can kind of give you a couple of different directions to go in, try this, try that. But definitely I want to let people know that, yes, you can definitely use me as a resource for your morning enjoyment of coffee at your house, and to learn a little bit about kind of like, let me help you navigate this literal world of different flavors and try to find like, and once you know it, and then you can kind of come in, grab your bag. And really with, you know, with coffee too, it's not, you know, I think people think like it's like outrageously expensive to come to a boutique roaster. I mean, we're certainly more expensive than what you'd find in a grocery store. But I do feel like, I mean, you don't drink box wine all the time, I don't believe. Like, so definitely, you know, to start your morning off, it's a couple dollars more. But I mean, as far as value versus I think to be able to kind of get a rapport with mm-hmm. the coffee guy, that you know what they're drinking, you know, he knows what you like and he helps you out and that. And all of our baristas, I mean, all of my baristas that I have at St. Rock, most of them been with me 3 and 4 years now, which is just
really
absolutely incredible. So they know their customers, they know what they like. And so we're really trying to, you know, really foster that to help people learn about what they like.
And I think that's, when people get into something, whether it's coffee, it's beer, it's wine, I think that they are willing to, they want to invest in it and they become invested in it, right? So I'm with you. We drink nice coffee and varied coffee at home because there's something about that ritual,
yeah,
right, that we enjoy. It's a little faster on weekdays than weekends, but there's something nice about smelling fresh roasted, fresh ground
and
coffee.
And there's certainly ways that you can set up your setup during the week to make it quicker, mm-hmm. that I can help certain grinders that store and measure everything out for you can help you get that better cup. And I mean, isn't that kind of what, and that's when you start talking about the city in general and you start talking about like life in general, isn't that what like makes it worth living? Like,
right.
If you're just sucking down whatever cup of coffee you're sucking down because that's what you suck down and you're not thinking about it at all, like, isn't that kind of sad a little bit, just, you know, or just if you're consuming vanilla music or you're, you know, whatever, we're much more colorful. And I think that's why people listen to your podcast, you know, and so I guess my job in the city is to put that extra little bit of flair into the cup of coffee. But, you know, art or music or food, all of those things kind of are just a little bit more exciting here. And so, you know, for me to do my part, that's great. And I think for people to understand that is also
huge. You know, when you put it that way, it makes me think about, and I won't name other cities because I don't want to offend
not
places.
Cleveland again.
No, not, I like Cleveland. Cleveland has a nice, if you've ever been there downtown,
I've never been.
But there are generic big cities that are endless chains of storefronts and very generic neighborhoods and all of that. And a lot of people really like that and like the consistency and the blandness of it. But that ain't New Orleans.
That's not New Orleans.
And what you guys are doing is part of that fabric that makes New Orleans, New Orleans.
Yeah. And I think so. I think people want to move here for that reason. People want to visit here for that reason. And I think that also it's just so ingrained in me to support small local businesses that for me, not supporting supporting a chain feels
right.
wrong, you know?
Yes.
And of course they all have their purposes.
But that's classic New Orleanian, right?
Yeah.
Why would we go to a chain when we have X, Y, and Z local, whatever?
Right.
That's so much better.
That's so much better. Right.
Right.
Or that I grew up with and I enjoy better, whether or not it's better or not, you know, I guess.
I think it is.
Yeah.
So, right? Yeah. Well, Kevin, I so appreciate you taking the time to share with us about Coast Roast
yes.
as well as coffee in New Orleans. I hope that we have piqued the interest of our listeners. I'm sure we have. If we have, I would love to hear from you. If you make it to St. Rock Market or the Auction Market here or soon Magazine yes. Street, let us know. Tag us. But just
That'd
let us
awesome.
Know.
Yeah,
and
no,
when you guys open, we'll do a little bit of follow-up and we'll share some information so that people can come in and learn about coffee and the nuances.
That'd be awesome. Right. I look forward to seeing everyone. And when you come visit, to come check us out, or if you're local, you know, just come on by.
All right. Thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you.
If you're enjoying the podcast, please share it with someone who loves New Orleans. New episodes are available every other Wednesday. Until next time, laissez le bon temps rouler.
Thanks for listening to the Beyond Bourbon Street podcast. Find us anytime at beyondbourbonst.com.